into the Friday afternoon live stream. I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Rod Babers and Jerry Hamilton. Guys, the big recruiting weekend has already commenced. And when I say big, I mean big. The first pictures come in of Josiah Sharma, the big defensive tackle out of Folsom, California, shows up on campus, already gives us a little tour on his Instagram going through the Austin airport. This is the pic of the day, though, that I saw was him driving on I-35, clearly. And in the background, there's nothing but cranes of new high-rises in the background, literally right along the Ladybird Lake, which used to be called Town Lake. Again, I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Jerry Hamilton and Rod Babers. We'll be talking about recruiting today. I got some questions we also want to talk about with the team. But Rod, I want to start with you, my man. You are the only one of this group that was, quote, recruited. What does a recruiting weekend look like for the good Rod Babers? What was it all about back in the day?
Oh, yeah, man. It was the red carpet treatment, right? So I think my mom and dad came with me, so it was important that, you know, mom and dad got a good impression. So it's almost, well, they have almost two different types of visits. You got the visit with mom and dad when you're hanging out, and then the visit where mom and dad go off on their own, and then you get separated, then you get to go hang out with the players, whoever your host is, and then you get to go out in the town and hang out. So it is almost two in one, especially when you got your people with you. But I do remember the first people that you meet when you come on campus are, well, it was, I don't know if it's this case anymore. I think they changed it. They're more politically correct now. It was the Angels. You had an Angel, and they were this group of this gorgeous, dry, they all look like models. And they were, so I knew that was, at least the selection process had to be a little bit skewed, because I don't know if they all, everybody who applied was ridiculously good looking, but they were all drop dead gorgeous. And then that was your Angel. So you had the Angel, you had an Angel the entire weekend. You had the same one. So she would kind of show you the ropes, and if you had questions, so you had a host, a player host, but you also had like an angel host. Yes, an angel host as well. So they made sure that you also, that you were taking care of.
Here's the question. Do you even remember who your player host was?
Yes. My player host for me was kind of a combo. It was Greg Brown and Joe Walker.
Oh, cool.
And they did that because when I came up early, the summer before I actually enrolled, I actually came up and worked out and stayed with Joe Walker and stayed with Greg Brown. I kind of went back and forth, like staying on that couch while I was working out with the team. So they already knew, you know, that I had a relationship with Joe Walker, like going back to H-Town, because he was from North Shore. And yep, some of those workouts we talked about, Jerry, where I got a chance to hang out with the North Shore guys, I had a relationship with Joe Walker prior to me becoming a player at Texas. So that relationship that I obviously had once I became a member of the team, and then I came up early and stayed with those guys, I actually knew Joe Walker from track in Houston and from my times like going up and trying to work out with those North Shore guys. So they gave me Joe Walker, and then Greg Brown. Greg Brown was awesome too. Greg Brown was really cool. Greg Brown was larger than life personality. They gave me secondary guys to make it easy. So those were my two guys that I hung out with on the visit, and we went out the night. I mean, I think we went out two nights actually. Went out that Friday night and went out that Saturday night. And I don't know how I got in the clubs, because I probably wasn't supposed to be there. They were not 18 and up clubs, but hey, we got into the clubs, you know what I mean? We hung out a little bit, had some fun. The Angels were all there too. And it wasn't anything crazy going to the Angels. I mean, they literally just wanted you to have a kind of a beautiful kind of host in addition to the player. So they were all really nice. I mean, I got to be good friends with a lot of the Angels once I became a player. They were all really good, really, really great kind of ambassadors. And they hung out with the parents too. So it wasn't just you got an Angel for the weekend, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, they came out with us and we hung out, got a chance to go out. We went to, they didn't go with us to the Gentlemen's Club. We did go to what they call the Flower Shop. So we hung out the Flower Shop. I think every host that I knew that was a host of a player took their players at one point to the Flower Shop. I went there. So I don't know if they still do that, but back when I went, you know, we hung out there and we got the red carpet treatment there as well. And like I said, probably shouldn't have been in there either.
No, I think those are definitely not 18 and up. They're more like 21 and up. And,
By the way, this whole conversation brought up a huge difference in visits now and visits when Rod was coming out of high school. It's June visits. Not as many students are on campus. That's a big difference now. So, I mean, that is just that is a very big difference in the recruiting process now, is that when Rod came through, he'd been committed to Texas for months, comes in for a December official visit, right, Rod? It was in December, right before the students got out. And that's the big change in recruiting now. By the way, I don't know if Matt's going to bring up a tweet when that goes live. Here we go. CJ Vogel doing the good work, man. Doing the good work. Javion Hilson has arrived in Austin for his official visit. There you go. Look, he hadn't got back to me, so I put on our thread, hey, this is the one guy I'm kind of wondering about. He hadn't got back to me double confirming the visit late in the week. But there you go. Javion Hilson has arrived in Austin. So that means Myron Charles isn't far behind. So all the D-line guys, the edge and D-line guys, are here this weekend of the six official visits.
And Hilson is from Cocoa, Florida. Charles from Port Charlotte, Florida. Sharma from the other end of the country over in Folsom, California. So
Caleb Chester is in Austin. He's already told me Caleb Chester is in Austin. So he's arrived. So which means, you know, then you have Caleb Edwards from California. And then you have, there you go. And then you have Michael Terry, who has the shortest drive, obviously an hour. He'll come up with his mom and dad. But so Caleb Chester at Texas. Here's the difference, Rod. Did you and your parents drive up for your official visit?
Yes.
Yeah. So now they have a car service that picks you up and drives you to Austin on Friday and takes you back on Sunday.
Oh, that is different. That's different.
Right?
Yeah. That's real. That's that real, like the red carpet treatment right there. That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. They came and picked up Caleb at 10 this morning, drove him to Austin for his official visit, and they take him and a family back on Sunday after it's concluded. That's pretty good. That's good stuff.
I like that.
Really good stuff. All right. Hey, we need to say thank you to one of our sponsors today. That sponsor is none other than Flat Creek Estate Winery. Rod Babers, tell folks a little bit, if you would, about Flat Creek over there between Laga Vista and Marble Falls.
Yeah, no doubt. I've got a chance to visit the venue. It is absolutely gorgeous. But what you may not know about Flat Creek, in addition to it being one of the best venues out there, is it's actually they have one of the most awarded wines in the state of Texas. That's right, folks. And this vineyard is close to Austin, Texas. Flat Creek Estate Winery, just minutes from downtown. And they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. Super Texan is now available at your local spec, so give it a try today. Of course, Flat Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. That's Flat Creek Estate Winery, flatcreekestate.com. And I can personally vouch for the Super Texan and the rosé, as my wife loves the rosé, especially this time of year. It's a little hot. You want something a little cooler, a little lighter than the red. Trust me, the rosé is great. But the Super Texan, fantastic. So check out Flat Creek Estate, Ronnie, flatcreekestate.com.
Jerry, I'm going to go to you because it's recruiting time of year right now. Anything that you're kind of watching closely this week? As the six of players show up on campus. And then also, you know, we didn't get to it this morning on Coffee and Football. There's a lot of guys visiting elsewhere this weekend as well. Do a quick note on what you think we can watch for this weekend in Austin, and then also what we think we might be looking at elsewhere today.
Yeah, so I think coming out of this weekend, I mean, look, what we want to hear behind the scenes is that Texas has a legitimate chance against FSU with Myron Charles. Texas has a legitimate chance, and we think they do, but a very legitimate chance against Alabama on Josiah Sharma. And Sharma will visit Oregon next weekend. So I ain't coming out on the D-line. Not going to be any commitments from those guys, nothing like that. Just that, all right, this is legitimate. This recruitment's going to continue in a favorable way. And Texas is in the fight until the end with those two guys. As far as Caleb Chester, I think Texas has a small lead there. I think continuing to build that lead this weekend, heading into A&M next weekend in Arkansas, 21st through 23rd. You know, look, I'm not saying there's not a – it's a higher than 0% chance Caleb Chester could commit to Texas, but I don't think it's way up there at this point, not as when they were on the way to Austin. But he's the one prospect to have my eye on just as a possibility. And not saying it's going to happen, because I know people run with that and take it all the message words. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I think he's the highest probability. So that's kind of what I'm, and Michael Terry, what did Sarkisian, what was that conversation like? What do they really see him as? Is it just athlete? And we're going to figure it out. Do they get into some specifics in terms of position with him and where they see his future? Because whatever Texas and whatever Texas A&M says the next two weekends is going to greatly impact Nebraska's chances with Michael Terry, in my estimation, because Nebraska's saying wide receiver, five-star, you're going to play. I think Texas and Texas A&M are going to have a little different message there. So that'll be interesting to see. As far as Texas targets, DeCorian Moore's at LSU. At Texas A&M has a huge weekend. This is their big weekend. They have the two offensive tackles. They have three on campus, but the two Texas needs to know about fans, Michael Fasusi, Lamont Rogers. Kelshawn Johnson's at A&M. They bumped Texas Tech, which is saying something because his best friend and Hitchcock quarterback Lloyd Jones is committed to Tech, is at Tech this weekend. So A&M's got a big visit weekend. They got two or three other guys on campus as well. Jonah Williams maybe not in play for Texas, but it's a big visit weekend for the Aggies. Oklahoma, not a big visit weekend. USC, big visit weekend out west. Obviously, Dorian Brewer's there. Kalik Lockett is there. They have some other big-time guys. So some big campus visits going on around the country. Texas, this is their smallest weekend. The next two, 37, 38 combined official visitors next two weekends.
Got it. Hey, Jerry, I do have a question for you here that's coming up on the chat. We're going to take your questions this hour, by the way, a little free-for-all here. Get everybody's questions in, so please leave them in the chat if you have them. This from Jeff, Jerry. Is July a dead period? Are there more visits after June? Is July a dead period?
So, yes. After June 25th, it goes dead until the end of July. So that's the one. Now, kids are going to be committing during that time, but no on-campus, no face-to-face, nothing like that. That's the dead period. That's when the college coaching staffs actually take their vacation. They'll leave town. They'll be gone 2 or 3 weeks. That's their real downtime. For the college coaches throughout this process. And for the kids, the process will continue. That doesn't mean there's not phone conversations, what have you, leading up to announcements. But the official visits end on midnight at 25th. The interesting thing there is, so Texas, that last visit weekends that ends on the 23rd, 21st through 23rd, you may see two or three, four teams try to sneak some guys in on that 24th, 25th for that final official visit before it goes dead. But June 25th through the end of July is the dead period.
And then obviously it does go on throughout the rest of the year. They can have players in on official visits during football weekends in the month. I believe in the month of August, you can have them in as well, all the way up until signing day, whether it be in December or in February as well. There is a little bit of a dead period again over the Christmas holiday. But other than that, it's pretty much open game for having guys in for official visits.
Hey, Bobby, I'm going to bring this one up real quick. Dallas Wilson did not make that visit. He had that visit scheduled. They were bummed in Austin on that when they really liked Dallas Wilson's talent. That Texas will continue to look to get him on campus. I believe he's at Florida next weekend, and then he's got Oregon on the 21st through 23rd. But that recruitment could continue into the fall. So that's something to watch with his recruitment. That one could continue into the fall. FSU has a tentative visit, an official visit in late November with Dallas Wilson. So that's not one that I think Texas will walk away from now. A lot will depend on how many of the wide receivers that commit to Texas here before the season. I think there's four guys that are at the top of the list here. There's DeCorian Moore, super freak. I even sent Rob that Instagram video. Yeah. I want Rod to comment on DeCorian Moore in a second, but just as an athlete. But DeCorian Moore, then you have Jamie French. And obviously, now we're coming off the highs. French was a done deal to Texas. Now he's doing interviews saying, no leader. I mean, I still think Texas is in a pretty good spot there. But that's here comes the recruiting. The recruiting bingo card's been playing out for June already. Then you have Kalik Lockett and you have Kelshawn Johnson. So Jamie French, I believe, is at Miami this weekend. DeCorian Moore at LSU, Malik Lockett, USC, and Kelshon Johnson, A&M. So is Texas recruiting the correct wide receivers? They dang sure are. By the way, so I sent Rod, Bobby, I know you saw it too, the Instagram video of DeCorian Moore working out with D-Rob, the wide receiver coach in South Dallas. Rod, what were your takeaways from how much of a super freak he is athletically?
Well, I love that he is a super freak, but that's why the workouts are so freaky and unorthodox. Yeah. He seems to be, you know, well, why do the same workout that the average, you know, above average, I should say, athlete is going to do, which we all know. It seems like he's kind of pushing his skill set and trying to evolve it even more. He's got like some basketball stuff that he's doing in there. And they, I love that they're trying to catch with different strange hand configurations just to try to test the strength of his hands. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. I think for a player like him early on already challenging himself, I mean, that's a really good sign about this, the mindset of a young man like that. But his film is unbelievable. He's one of those guys that could potentially be the top receiver kind of taken off the board. He's got that kind of potential that whenever he's drafted, he could be the top receiver taken. And now it's all about the system that he goes to. And the Sark system is there's not a more wide receiver friendly system potentially in the country. You can argue about talent development is better at Ohio State and things of that nature. You can make that argument, but in terms of a wide receiver friendly system, Sark can sell his with anybody. He really can. I had a stat from Sports Information Solutions said that A.D. Mitchell had 37 unique routes last year. Unique routes that he ran. 37. I can't even think of 37 routes right now. It used to be a route tree. A route tree used to have a certain number. It's like 37 unique routes. I would really stress out trying to get past maybe 15 or 20. But that's how sophisticated Sark's offense is. And I think that's why wide receivers like it. And by the way, I think the reason that you're able to get to that many unique routes is because Sark moves you around, right? He puts you everywhere. Yeah. You're not going to be in one spot out on the outside. You're going to be in the slot. It's going to be on the outside. It's going to put you in motion, compressed sets. Going to put you, put you kind of flex every now and then to move you around the formation. I think that's why wide receivers like it a lot too, because he's going to show off your skill set. He wouldn't even bring you in if you weren't a wide receiver that could play all those positions and learn them all. But getting back to DeCorian Moore, I think that's why he's at least, you know, attracted to Sark's offense. Every wide receiver would be.
Yeah. Hey, Rod, I got to be honest. You think maybe the safety has to stay back on a post route against DeCorian Moore?
Well, yeah, exactly, right? Sark keeps bringing in his speed, but he's one of those guys that he could do anything you want him to, right? He could take the top off of defense. He could be the possession guy. He's got good size on him. If you need him to work the intermediate, I think he could end up being an elite route runner if necessary. Usually, freakish athletes like him don't need to be elite route runners. They can separate, accelerate, decelerate, getting in and out of breaks, you know, set defenders up. You know, if that kind of athleticism combined with a guy who's going to be a precision route runner too, man, and you're talking about, you know, next level elite wide receiver play. Like I said, first wide receiver drafted off the board type of potential and upside.
We've already talked about Josiah Sharma being in Austin over the weekend. He posted his news and notes to Instagram. CJ Vogel has already put up a picture of Javian Hilton out of Cocoa, Florida. Now Myron Charles is in town. CJ got this pic of Myron. He's here already, ready to go on his official visit to Texas as well. So the Longhorns having it started. We put this up earlier. These are the guys coming in that we've been tracking. Caleb Edwards, tight end out of Oak Ridge out in California. Myron Charles and Javian Hilson. We talked about the two guys from Florida. Then also Josiah Sharma already in town from Folsom, California, the big defensive lineman. Caleb Chester already in town as well. Not sure yet on whether or not Michael Terry has made it, although Michael Terry did post about an hour or so ago that he was headed on the way to Austin, Texas. Good stuff there, guys, and good stuff from CJ getting those guys at the airport coming on the way in.
CJ.
Hey, Rod, here's one for you, because you actually we're going to hit a couple of recruiting questions here, but we're going to talk about Texas football stuff as well. We're going to knock out some recruiting questions. And Rod just happened to watch some of these guys recently. So let's bring up this question on Michael Terry, because Bobby and I have given our opinions on Michael Terry. Jerry, Michael Terry's a five-star athlete. Where would he rank as a linebacker, edge, or tight end? Would he be the number one tight end? Not specifically on that. I'll give my answer on that. But I want Rod's thoughts on Michael Terry because he actually just watched video on him. So for me, Michael Terry, he wouldn't be the number one tight end because he just hasn't played it. Nick Townsend, to me, is a freak. So Nick Townsend's my number one tight end. I think I'm interested to hear Rod's point of view on opinion on this. I think Michael Terry has some Amari Nyblak similarities because he's going to move like a wide receiver if he plays tight end like Nyblak. But as an edge prospect, that's really difficult for me because he doesn't really want to play defense. So he's hard to project. So you would never project him ahead of Lance Jackson or Elijah Barnes or Smith Orogbo or Hayden Lowe, any of these guys coming in. He wants to be an offensive player. So I just will never, despite him being a hell of an athlete, I would never put him ahead of those guys.
Yeah, I think he's an offensive player. I do. And not only because I think that's where his passion is, as you pointed out, Jerry, but I think his game to me, the way he's as an athlete, the way he moves, the pace in his game, you know, and I didn't watch a lot of him playing defense, but I did see him playing some cornerback. I mean, the guy played all over the place, punter, quarterback, wildcat quarterback, running back, wide receiver. I do think he's an offensive player. I think he's going to choose offense. Guys, that's why you go look at the NFL right now. Just got a sidebar. There are six players in the NFL, non-quarterbacks right now, making at least $30 million a year. Four of them are wide receivers. Let that sink in. The second most important position, gentlemen, in football now is wide receiver. It ain't defensive end. It ain't edge rusher. It ain't left tackle. The NFL is telling you it's wide receiver. And by the way, they don't even include CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase, who are also about to get $30 million. You're about to have six wide receivers making $30 million a year and only two defensive players making $30-plus million. Let that sink in. It's quarterback, then it's wide receiver. So I think it starts at this level when guys like Michael Terry say, no, I don't want to play DB. I don't want to play linebacker edge. I want to play wide receiver or tight end or JT Sanderson. I'm not playing edge. You can get drafted higher there. Yeah. But I don't have fun doing that. I want to play where I'm having fun. And I have fun on offense when I score touchdowns. And all the girls like it when I score touchdowns. Right. So that's the reality we live in. And I think he's an offensive player. Like I said, I love his vision as an offensive player, his balance. I love like I said, there's a patience in his game too as an offensive player, whether he's waiting to set up a block, waiting for blocks to set up or get in place, or whether he's setting up defenders as a ball carrier. I actually like that. So I think he's an offensive guy. Now, here's the question. Is he going to just play wide receiver, or is he going to get with a really creative mind and decide, you know what, we are not going to – and Sark talked about this too. He wants more versatility in personnel and more versatility schematically too. Could you get someone who is – studying the NFL, and I always say football is we're going more and more toward positionless football, multiplicity, hybridism. You know, look at Cordarrelle Patterson in the NFL, look at Deebo Samuel and Kyle Juszczyk and the way they use him. Could he be one of those types of weapons where a coach doesn't necessarily want him to specialize in a position where they do believe he's an offensive weapon and they will, like Christian McCaffrey, and they will treat him accordingly? And move him around the chessboard and train him and develop him in that way, and then have that be the way that he is promoted and marketed as in that next level NFL athlete. And then maybe he can specialize there. So it depends on what he wants to do. I think there are a couple of great offensive minds that wouldn't mind letting him play different positions. You may be a wide receiver, but we're going to use you like Deebo Samuel. You may be a running back, but we're going to use you like Christian McCaffrey, like a Cordarrelle Patterson, and move you around. I wouldn't doubt these days if you have someone thinking outside the box as it relates to his skill set.
Yep. That's interesting, Rod, because I've been doing this a long time. And so the guys that I think of when I see a big 6'3", 6'2 and a half, kind of, I don't want to say bulky, but big featured wide receiver prospect that plays a little bit all over the field, I think of guys like David Boston.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they get really, really big.
Yeah, get huge.
I don't know if he can get that big. Or A.J. Brown. Because Michael Terry, to your point, and Jerry pointed this out to me, he runs 10.7, 10.8. It's not like he's running 11 flat at 200-plus pounds.
Yeah.
He's running 10.7, 10.8, so he can move.
It's true.
And so I don't you know, I'm kind of torn whether he's a receiver, an all-purpose guy, to your point, where you use him as an H-back slash whatever. Yeah. It just all depends, kind of, right? That's my question, I guess.
Well, I think the one thing we know from a Texas standpoint is when you have DeCorian Moore, we're just talking about this, right? People say, oh, what if he wants a player? So you're fine. DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Kalik Lockett, and Kelshawn Johnson. Michael Terry's not really like those guys. So from a Texas standpoint, I think we know what Sark is recruiting at wide receiver right now.
Yeah.
The question with a Michael Terry is, you know, what Rod said is, well, look at the salaries for a wide receiver. So people around you, they say, man, a tight end is a more devalued position as far as financially in the NFL. Yeah, but you still have to actually be able to play wide receiver in the NFL. I think that's so you got to have good – when you recruit like Michael Terry, you better have really good people around you that are actually going to give you sound advice on your future and not tell you what you want to hear necessarily. Because telling a guy like this what he wants to hear is going to lead to a phone call back to you in a couple of years saying, hey, man, you told me I was going to be a wideout. He's 17, 18 years old. He may not understand why he might not be right now. So I hope he has good people around him. Not that he can't prove me wrong and be a wideout. I mean, I guess, but I just don't see that long term.
All right. If you're tracking it and been with us from the outset, I apologize, but I do need to restate this. We're tracking guys coming in on their official visits to the University of Texas today. CJ Vogel already snapshots of Myron Charles, defensive lineman out of Port Charlotte, Florida. Javian Hilson, defensive end out of Cocoa, Florida. Josiah Sharma already on campus, defensive lineman out of California. Caleb Chester, defensive back out of Fort Bend Marshall, already on campus as well. I guess we're waiting on photos of both Caleb Edwards and Michael Terry at this point to confirm that they're in town or on their way in town as well. Before we get going any further, we do have some questions that I've got logged here. I want to get to as it relates to the team. But first, I want to ask Jerry to read a spot for one of our favorite folks, South Point Dodge, over on the Motor Mile in Austin.
Yeah, I mean, look, somebody's put 33,000 miles on a car in 1 year covering this recruiting stuff. I like doing the South Point Dodge read, guys. Hey, Texas football fans, score an easy extra point this season. When you get to the point at South Point Dodge, South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock, and their award-winning sales staff doesn't do games or gimmicks. They just get straight to the point by getting you the very best deal. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Come see us off I-35 in South Austin or at southpointdodge.com. Get to the point at South Point Dodge.
Appreciate the Starks for being with us here on South Point with South Point Dodge and sponsors of On Texas Football. Thank you very much. All right, let's get to the chat line, answer some questions this Friday afternoon, have a little fun here. This morning, Jerry, you and I were talking about, with Allie Peake, talking about the Florida Gators person that was on with us, talking about how in the SEC, every week is a big week. You can't just take a week off. And we said, well, Texas kind of feels that way and has felt that way forever because Texas has always been everybody's biggest game in the Big 12. You know, Kansas State's second biggest game wasn't OU. After Kansas, which is their rival, it would be Texas. You know, Oklahoma State's biggest game other than Oklahoma was Texas. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech and Baylor's biggest game, Texas. TCU's biggest game, Texas. Iowa State, I mean, they made a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
All right, so Jordan has a question for us. Why do we feel, as Texas fans, we were targeted every week by other teams? Don't we feel like Bama and other programs face the same issues? My answer to this is simple. Yes, there are a couple other teams like Texas. USC out west,
yes,
very much like Texas because they were in a less – I don't want to say lesser, but they were in a non-SEC Big Ten conference. And they were the big boys that people got. Other head coaches get raises off of beating Texas and USC and Alabama. That's who they get raises off of. What do y'all make of the question?
Yeah, so I think you look at it from this perspective, I think. To your point, Bobby, here's the way I look at it. USC, That's the one school where 60% of kids that went to Oregon State probably won't wish they could be at USC. Arizona State, the same. So, yeah, when USC, you get a chance to beat and show those Trojans that I should have been a player there, right? Yeah. Alabama certainly faced it because every kid wanted to prove to Nick Saban that they should have been at Alabama because that was the program. And I think all the teams and those fan bases, I mean, think back to when Alabama lost back-to-back years to Ole Miss under Hugh Freeze. That was a big, big deal for Ole Miss. Didn't end up on probation, but that was a huge deal for Ole Miss. I mean, so Alabama's faced that for the last 15 years under Nick Saban. What I think is interesting with Texas moving to the SEC, Rod, is look at Georgia, for instance. And I'm not saying Georgia's not going to be up for a game at Texas. They certainly will be. But if you asked 85 scholarship players on the Georgia team, did you ever grow up wanting to beat the Texas Longhorns because of where those kids grew up? Maybe three, Dylan Bell, a couple other guys from Texas. Dylan Bell wanted to go to Texas. Texas didn't offer him. So those kids didn't grow up wanting to beat the Texas Longhorns. That's going to be something different. I think teams are going to get up for Texas in the SEC, but there's going to be a difference for those kids from Louisiana to Florida. They didn't grow up turning on the TV to watch Texas play Alabama. Mm-hmm. They just didn't. So they'll get up for Texas because Texas is highly ranked and they made the playoff last year. It's perfect timing, Rod. But those Georgia kids didn't grow up saying that one team I want to beat, it's the Texas Longhorns. It's Alabama if you go to Georgia.
Yeah. Whereas if you go to TCU, Texas Tech, et cetera, it is Texas. Yep. Rod, what do you think about that?
No, I think both of you guys hit the nail on the head there. I think that's what makes it so personal for the teams that are playing up against Texas. Number one, they are the blue blood, and there weren't a lot of blue bloods in the Big 12, right? In terms of traditional old school blue bloods, it was just Texas and Oklahoma. So when Texas and Oklahoma are good, of course, they got a target on their back. And I agree with Jerry. The added kind of angst to it is that a lot of guys on those rosters, because Texas is the main recruiting ground for all the schools in the Big 12. There's always a very large, if not majority, portion of your team that wanted to go to Texas, know a lot of guys on that Texas squad, and either are envious, jealous, or want to make sure that they show Texas that Texas should have recruited them, and they should have been one of those guys on that roster. So I think that's the added element. And I think anytime a blue blood is good, a traditional blue blood, you do deal with that where you're circled on the calendar, period, for your circled on the schedule for all those teams. When you're a blue blood and you're good, teams are going to look forward to playing you, to no matter what the situation may be, whether they grew up wanting to beat you or not. There's something about, if you are a college football fan, something about beating those old traditional blue bloods that bring that tradition and bring that clout with them when they come to town or when you got to go there, because the traditions are great. The stadiums are big. I mean, those are the games you get pumped up for. Those are the big games, man. And it's something about blue bloods because they've established so much tradition and they got old money. And they know how to put on a spectacle. And it's something about going there as opposed to going to nothing wrong with Iowa State or Kansas, but the main blue blood football programs or even TCU for that matter. There's something about, you know, playing that those old kind of legacy, historically great programs, in my opinion.
Bobby, I want to make one point on this too, because Texas is in a hell of a position this year. Since they won at Alabama last year, if they happen to clip Georgia and Austin this year, they instantly go to a different level moving forward. With kids in the SEC that go to these SEC schools, if you beat Alabama and Georgia back-to-back years and you go to the playoff the year you beat Bama and then you beat Georgia your first year in the SEC, Texas goes to a total different level in the mindset of all those kids that play for SEC teams and kids coming up.
Here's another important aspect that I want to put is I may have had it before. Hold on a second. In the SEC, it's not like that. Only with Arkansas and A&M, people will get up for Texas, but they won't have that natural disdain.
That's right.
That's a good way to put it. They won't have that natural look to it, and I think that's kind of what we're all getting.
Tennessee hates Alabama, right? Florida, Georgia rivals, Florida, Florida State, Miami, they all hate each other, right? I mean, and then you look around, I mean, South Carolina is more Clemson, right? And the teams they've traditionally played. So it's just like, it's going to take a while in it, the success of Texas to get to that level. But, you know, they have a chance to start the clock pretty quickly this year. I'm very interested to see how this season plays out for Texas, because that's a great way to put it. They don't have the disdain, but if Texas comes in and has success year one in the SEC, things are going to go to another level. And then when Arch Manning takes the field, it's going to another level.
Then there's going to be some people in the state of Mississippi and state of Tennessee that have some issues. All right, this is from Juan. Any new? Thanks for the super chat, Juan. Any news on Texas baseball coach David Pierce? And if he does get fired, what are your thoughts on coaching search? Which coaches you think are great and realistic options? So, look, it's my – Chris Del Conte does not want this to be a free-for-all if he does decide to make a move as the baseball coach. I think it is telling – I will say this, that Chris Del Conte has not come out and give a public endorsement of David Pierce at this point, 5 days following his last game. So I think it's very telling, but I bet, and my thought process is, it'll be a 24-hour bing, bang, boom type of thing. If Texas makes a move, David Pierce will be relieved of his duties, and 24 hours later, Texas will have a baseball coach. That will keep Texas. Why would Texas do that? Well, one, then make sure that they have somebody on the hook that they really like before just getting rid of somebody that has taken Texas to a couple of College World Series. That would happen. Okay. Secondly, it allows them to operate in a way where everybody's not trying to take pot shots at Texas about why a coach shouldn't go there in the process. And there's not this big hullabaloo about it all. So if Texas makes a move, this is what I believe. It'll be a 24, 48-hour, you know, okay, David Pierce is fired. Then we'll have a hire in 24, 48 hours. Simply because Texas doesn't want that kind of circus around any of its programs, if at all possible.
Here's my thoughts on this, too. I agree with Bobby. Here's my thoughts on this in conclusion. If Texas doesn't make a move after this weekend, that means your next coach is playing in Omaha. FY.
Yep. Hey, Rod, this one's from Chris Bennett. Rod liked that. Rod liked that one. He stood up on his chair a little bit on that response, Jerry. Hey, Chris Bennett asked you, Rod, which recruits did you host when you were a player? Name a couple of them.
Most famous one is Derek Johnson. That's the one I claim a lot of credit for. Was Derek Johnson and me and Mac and I had a meeting right before that. Literally, Mac was like, "Hey, you know, we love you. You're great. Yeah, we think you're, you know, good. You think you're charismatic, and you know, you can close the deal with any recruit. But Derek Johnson is special, and we need to make sure we get him. So if there's anything distraction, you got a woman you're thinking about, or you got something going on this weekend, you got anything else in your life that is more important than this recruiting visit right now, let us know so that we can put somebody on the job who's going to close." And I'm like, "Coach, I'll close the deal." And he's like, "You want to play for a national title? We got to have this dude." Like he Mac had never really done that. He's like, "You want, we got to have him." And I was like, "Listen, I told Mac, I said, listen, as long as you don't ask how I do it, I'll get him. You don't ask me how, and don't ask me for a synopsis of it later on. If you ain't asking no questions about how, I will get it done." And Derek Johnson, as y'all know, a legendary lifetime Longhorn and a great human being as well. So I closed the deal on that one. And that one I took personal, but it was a group thing. I ain't gonna lie. I got everybody on board with that one. I got me and Sims was on board on that one. I got some of the older guys to help me out. We showed DJ a damn good time and made sure it was a long time.
Hey, Bobby. In one of the discussions on Texas message boards over the years we've been doing this, whenever I have like a must-have recruits, people are like, "Oh, there's no must-have recruits." Rod Babers just said, and I've said this before, College coaches don't agree with that. There are must-have recruits. Rod Babers posted a must-have recruit.
Yeah, I was given the message and the assignment beforehand. Like we got to get it done. How'd I do it? Hey, unless I get permission from DJ, I can't be telling everybody about all that. I can tell my personal stuff, but I can't be telling what I did with my man Derek Johnson. But he's a Longhorn. That's all that matters. Dorian McCullough was another guy hosted. Remember him back in the day?
Rod, you hosted somebody faster than you. That's crazy.
Yes, dude, he was.
That's hard to do.
Yes, and I remember Coach Aquino was really high on Dorian McCullough. He just had some stuff going on in his life. He had a lot of things happening. I think he ended up either leaving or something like that. But he didn't finish at Texas. But I remember hosting him on the visit. I hosted a lot of guys. I mean, I think I would love to know. I wish they kept up with your hit rate back then, like your success rate as a host. Because I don't remember many guys that I hosted. I think we got them all. I'm not sure about it. I think we got most of them.
You were pretty good, Rod. But I tell you, the guy that was maybe the best, and you know him, and he ended up being a college coach, and he was the son of a coach, he's a coach today at Tyler Legacy, and that's Bo Trahan.
Oh, I love Bo Trahan. That's my boy. That's a dog. I love me some Bo Trahan. That's my dog. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was really good as well. Yeah. Look, we can talk about this until we're blue in the face. The reality of it is it takes there are can't miss or must have recruits.
Yeah.
Okay. That can change your program. Texas has proven that year after year after year with some, guys, frankly, that changed the trajectory of what's going to happen in Austin. Michael Taft right now seems pretty clutch.
That is exactly right.
It just depends on who it is. You know what I mean? Yep. And it can be a guy that you don't expect it to be. It doesn't have to be the typical guy that you're out there looking. All right, Jerry, I had a question for you coming in before we get to our here's Caleb Chester from CJ Vogel. He's actually already in his hotel getting ready to go over to Moncrief Newhouse facility. Yeah. He and his family arrived there. I think they stay at the Four Seasons, don't they, guys?
Ooh, yeah.
They get the big-time treatment there.
Not just a continental breakfast at the Four Seasons.
Yeah, they get that room service, baby. Room service, whatever you want. Boom.
Hey, before we get going to the next question, I want to say this from Max Moeller, and it is Brandon Brown update, please. That's a big defensive lineman that visited LSU last weekend, has committed to Texas, but doesn't visit Texas for another week. Where's he at this week, Jerry, and what's the situation overall?
Yeah, Brandon Brown's scheduled to be at Tennessee this weekend, Texas the 14th through 16th, and Miami the 21st through 23rd. I know there was we're going through this. It's June. The first visit weekend, boom, everything comes out of that. Guys are flipping, decommitting, not even going to visit Texas, visit elsewhere. Of course, none of that happened. Sark and Kenny Baker got on the phone with Brandon Brown and Brandon, his mom, his older brother, which I think is key in the recruitment, and a couple of other people close to Brandon on Monday evening. So the visits continue. The Texas LSU is where the decision is going to come from. I know people are putting in all the LSU predictions right now. I get it. He has the longest standing relationship with Bo Davis. But I'm one that is going to sit back and say, let's see what happens as this official visit process unfolds, because the first official visit gives you a target. Let's see what happens. There's a reason Sark likes the later visits. Not saying that's 100% right. Kirby Smart goes early, and he has the most talented roster in college football. But I will say this. The visit process will continue, and let's see what happens. I'm not saying he's not going to go to LSU. I'm not saying he's for sure not going to go to Texas. I'm more one that says we've had one official visit down. Tennessee's going to muddy the water in their own way this weekend. Then he comes to Texas. And then if he does continue with that process, if he doesn't just visit LSU and Texas and make a decision after that, but if he makes that Miami visit, don't think that won't muddy the water on some level too. So, I mean, that's the process. I mean, and when these June visits start, man, that first weekend, it starts the hype machine in our industry. We've worked in it a long time, and I'm not hating on anything, but it starts the hype machine. But the visits continue. He's at Tennessee this weekend. He told Texas, I'm coming to Texas, see you next June 14th through 16th, and then we'll go from there and see what happens after that visit.
All right, it's 45 minutes into this live stream, Longhorn live stream on Friday afternoon. I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Rod Babers and Jerry Hamilton. Rod, I'm going to ask you now to talk about our friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery, if you don't mind.
Of course, our friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery. Matter of fact, I can vouch for Flat Creek Estate myself. I believe we still got a couple of bottles of Flat Creek in the house right now, but not many. My wife is a huge fan of it, and so am I. The Super Texan, folks, trust me, one of the most awarded wines right now in Texas, and our folks over at Flat Creek Estate, they are not far from you. That's right. Flat Creek Estate Winery is just minutes from downtown, and they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. It is fantastic. Super Texan is now available at your local Specs, so give it a try. Of course, Flat Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. So go check out flatcreekestate.com to go check out Flat Creek Estate Winery, or make reservations to go visit the venue, or you can go order wine. And like I said, I would recommend the Super Texans. This time of year, I'd also recommend the rosé. Usually I'm a white wine guy. The Super Texan is fantastic, but if you want a little blend of in between, the rosé is great, especially this time of year. It's cool, refreshing, light. I'd recommend. There you go.
Hey, Rod, there are people all over this chat asking you, Tyler Davis, if he can't tell Coach Mac, he can't tell us.
I can't.
And then Arch Manning goes, how'd you do it, Rod? He's gonna remain mum? Is that gonna go down forever?
We gotta plead the fifth on that as well. And my man DJ's got kids now. I think he's got like 5 kids. Oh no, we don't need them stories out there. Nope, he can't do it. So what did I do with that extra meal money, Rod? Hey, I always spit that extra meal money on the recruits, man. And hey, it did help that one of my best friends in the world was Chris Sims. So Sims always rode big, man. Sims had that access to that black car, that, you know what I mean, that black Amex back in the day. So we hosted recruits nice, man. We did it big, man. We did it big.
UT boy, hook 'em. Thanks for the super chat. We appreciate you as always. UT boy. All right, I got a couple other questions I want to get to here as we finish up this final 15 minutes. Hey, here's one from Roger G that I think is good for us. How do y'all see Texas playing against the run this year? Nervous teams may run all over us since we don't have Sweat and Murphy anymore. Hey, look, that's a problem for a lot of teams that they worry about that. Texas did go to the portal, though, and grab three guys. And Tia Savea, Bill Norton, as well as Jermaine Lole, who people are saying looks pretty good out of the gate here in Austin. Jerry, Rod, either of you guys want to take that question? How do you see Texas playing against the run this year from Roger G?
I'll go first. I think schematically you're going to see, and I think it's kind of be part of the Johnny Nansen influence, I think you're going to see more single high looks. That whether it be cover three or cover one, to get the extra defender down into the box when you don't have Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, who both demand a double team. It's hard to win with light boxes. They actually won a lot last year with light boxes. They actually led the country in yards per rush allowed with led the power five in yards per rush allowed with a light box. Fewer defenders than you have blockers. Well, you can do that when you got the best D-tackle duo in college football. So they don't have that. They will have capable veteran experience in the interior D-line, but you won't have the force of nature you had last year. So I think what they'll supplement is bringing an extra defender down into the box. Now, Texas plays a lot of match quarters. That's that Gary Patterson influence from a couple of years ago, and it's been great for Texas. That means you're playing two deep safeties. Well, it means you're going to play with a lighter box a lot of the times. The Johnny Nansen influence, Johnny Nansen and Arizona guys, they played a single high safety over 70% of the time, like 75% of the time, they're basically with a single high. I mean, they're playing cover three or they're playing cover one. Now, it allowed them to do some real exotic things with that extra defender they bring it down into the box toward the line of scrimmage. And I think that's what Texas is going to have to do more of, just to shore up the rush defense. Now, if you do that, you're going to have to trust your DBs a little bit more outside on the islands, especially when you're playing cover one. And by the way, Sark wants to do that. He's talked about it openly. We want to play more man coverage. We want to play more press man coverage. And we can get to why they want to play more press man. But I think ultimately that's because of the RPO game. You want to take away the quick hitters on the RPO game, you play more press coverage. But I think that's what you're going to see, the Johnny Nansen influence, guys. More single high safeties extra defender down in the box more than you had last year. They're still going to be pretty much a match quarters team. That's what they majored in last year. They were top five rate in a power five playing match quarters. But in addition to that now, they're going to have to put that extra defender down into the box at times, unless these D tackles are just really, really good, way better than we expected. And that could be the case, but you need to have a contingency plan ready. And the contingency plan is, let's bring that extra defender down there to help shore up the rush defense.
Hey, Rod, what did you see from Johnny Nansen's defense that you like?
Oh my God.
Because I think there's going to be a lot of elements of that this year.
I think it's the reason that Sark is so damn confident right now that the pass defense is going to be okay, and he hasn't really talked about it as being problematic, even though last year it was an issue, and in the spring game it was an issue. And Sark, you know, he seems to be confident that they're going to be okay. I think, most of all, he likes to frontline starters that he has in the secondary. They upgraded with Makuba. Derek Williams is going to be better. Malik Muhammad is going to be awesome. But I think he's confident that Johnny Nansen influence is also going to be something that makes a huge impact on the defense. Now, Johnny Nansen loved exotics. Think about Johnny Nansen's defense that made it so unique at Arizona was that every week, man, he'd throw something different at you. So you doing research as a coordinator and as a staff, trying to figure out how Johnny Nansen's defense was going to game plan for you was almost a fool's errand, because he came up with something unique and exotic almost every week. Against Oregon State, they ran a 3-4, they ran a 4-2-5, and they threw out a 3 high safety package out of nowhere against Oregon State. Truly hybrid multiple defense. When they played up against USC and they played up against Washington, dynamic first-round quarterbacks, elite, sophisticated passing games. They broke out. It was an interesting package they broke out. They broke out a quarters package. Well, you can call it – they called it a penny package. But essentially, they had 7 DBs on the field and 1 linebacker. 3 down linemen, 7 DBs and 1 linebacker. And it worked really well against Penix. Held them they had no passing touchdowns. Caleb Williams had his lowest passing yardage game of the season. And he did a lot of funky things with that look. I seen him in 2022 against San Diego State. He had a 5 down lineman package. Called it the Joker package that they broke out. In Washington State, they ran the old flex, the double eagle flex against them, the old Desert Swarm defense. I mean, he's got a lot in his bag. Now, PK's defense, although effective last year, pretty static. And not a lot of variety in PK's defense. Him actually bringing in the match quarters, that was something new for PK that he hadn't really done a lot of when he was at Washington. And so I know that PK is willing to be malleable. He's willing to learn. And I think that Johnny Nansen influence is going to be undeniable from that aspect. More single high, but also more exotic looks. Week to week, potentially matchup-based defenses with versatile defenders, talking about versatility, that you can move around the chessboard and give the defense a different look than what they anticipated week to week. So that's my prediction. Exotics from Johnny Nansen, you're going to see more of.
Good stuff, Rod. B. Hey, guys, I've got a couple more minutes here to go for the Friday afternoon live stream. We are tracking the recruiting weekend for the Longhorns. CJ Vogel already snapped pics of big Myron Charles and Javian Hilson, the defensive end out of Cocoa, Florida, as well as Myron Charles from Port Charlotte, Florida. Josiah Sharma is already on campus out of Folsom, California. So he's another one that's in town. Caleb Chester is another one. And I got this question, Jerry, from Nathan as it relates to this. What visitor this weekend outside of Chester could Texas make the biggest move for? Here are the 6, for those of y'all unaware that are going to be in there. Caleb Edwards, Myron Charles, Josiah Sharma, Caleb Chester, Javion Hilson, and Michael Terry. What visitor this weekend, Jerry, could, outside of Chester, could Texas make the biggest move for?
I mean, so it's a couple of different ways to look at that. The biggest move would be Javion Hilson, because he's never been on campus before. So could you vault up to where – you're in the conversation for the FSU commit, possibly. That would be the biggest move, because you're starting from zero. But more for, I think, what he's asking specifically, it's got to be Myron Charles for me. It's got to be going from, all right, Florida, Miami, in the state of Florida, they all think Florida State's going to be the pick for Myron Charles at the end of the day. 2, we've heard more, all right, especially when I was down at Port Charlotte mid-May, Texas could be legitimate competition for FSU if we coming out of this weekend. But the only time he's been on campus, it was just him. Now he's got his circle with him, his mom, a couple other family members. So if you come out of this weekend saying FSU's got a fight on their hands, now they may win because they're in Florida and the kids in Port Charlotte, but they got a true fight on their hands. That would be good news for Texas. That's what we're wanting to hear for Texas on the defensive line position. I mean, because the next three weekends, they got their top five guys coming in on the board. I mean, this weekend it's Sharman Charles. So you want to hear these fights are real. Texas continues to ascend. Battling Alabama for Sharman. Knowing Oregon will make that tougher for both Alabama and Texas next weekend. But that's really what you want to hear. Michael Terry's so much of a wild card. That's really just going to come down to the conversation with Sark, AJ Milwin, what they really have lay out for their plan for him. But it's if you're starting at zero, getting in the picture would be a Javion Hilson. If you're looking to say, we think we have a shot here, but now we know we have a shot, and this thing's going to be a battle, that would be Myron Charles and Sharma. I think Texas leads for Caleb Chester. I think they'll extend their lead this weekend.
Couple quick questions we have from other folks, Jerry, I want to get to. Have you heard anything of a rescheduled official visit for Dorian Brew? I think you have, right? Answer that real quick, and then I got to get to another one.
Yeah, I haven't heard the exact date yet, 14th through 16th or 21st through 23rd. Before he started shuffling the official visit schedule, he had Oregon on the 14th through 16th and Ohio State 21st through 23rd. Texas believes they're getting a weekend visit. So I believe it'll be the 14th through 16th or 21st through 23rd. My inkling is Oregon may get a midweek, but we'll see when the family releases that after this weekend.
Okay, and then this one too, Jerry, from Matt Villarreal. Do QBs like Arch or Trey Owens play a role in recruiting some of these top receivers like DeCorey Moore, Kalik Lockett, Jamie French, Kelshon Johnson? It would make sense because they could possibly be throwing two of them in the future. I think it makes so much sense that it's almost a no-brainer. How do you not go to that Texas spring game and see not only Arch Manning but Trey Owens throw the ball around the yard and think, hey, man, Texas has got some quarterbacks that are young that I could play with? What do you think, Jerry?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think because of NIL and the way things have changed, maybe not as much as it once did. I mean, we can go back to the Rod B days. I mean, when Roy, BJ, and Sloan visited Texas, Chris Sims was the Gatorade Player of the Year. Say that didn't have an impact on Roy Williams picking Texas over Texas A&M, I mean, we'd all be crazy to say think that didn't have an impact. And BJ Johnson, I mean, that was Phil Fulmer versus Mack Brown. You want to talk about two of the top three with Bobby Bowden at the time in recruiting in college football. And you know what? Texas then, Mack could say, I'm about to present you the same opportunity that Tennessee is right now, because Tennessee was coming off a national championship the year before. Because they had Peyton Manning, who recruited all those players to Tennessee. Then he missed the title. Then T. Martin wins the title. And Tennessee at that time, man, they were rolling. And Phil Fulmer, Bobby knows him personally, is a great, great recruiter. So I think it helps. Now, nowadays, is it an end-all, be-all? I don't think it is. I just think NIL's changed the game. Because here's the reality, I think, with this is some receiver could be a lean to Texas and say, man, I think the idea of playing with Arch, this is going to be awesome. Texas is winning. What if somebody comes and offers you $500,000 more a year in NIL? What are you going to do? I mean, that's just where it's changed so much. And I know people say, well, that was going on before. It wasn't going on to the levels it is now. I mean, there's a difference. Back in the old days, it was car, car, house. Now it's a lot more than that in a different way.
Good stuff, Jerry. All right, this one from Jay Lee. Welcome back, Jay Lee. Do you all think Jeff Banks and Steve Sarkisian will stay together, or is Banks a candidate for getting offers that take him away? You know, Jeff Banks has been mentioned for a couple of head jobs through the years. One of them most recently was UTEP, obviously, and Washington State, which is his alma mater. He's been mentioned. But unless or until that happens, I don't see those two being torn apart. That's my answer on that one for right now. Until we see something different, Jay, I would say unless Banks gets a head coaching job, he's not even that interested in a pro tight end coaching job because he gets paid so much at Texas. I feel pretty sure that Jeff Banks will be there with Steve Sarkisian kind of as his right-hand man, especially on the offensive side of the ball. excuse me, this one from High, I'm Boo Corrigan. Jerry, yeah. Do you see the tight end classes, two or three? You have Amari Winston, and Texas is pushing for Nick Townsend and Keyote Armstrong, and also the kid coming in this weekend, Caleb Edwards. What do you think?
I think it's a two tight end class. I think, I think Winston continues to kind of flirt with some others. We'll see what happens there. I think Nick Townsend is a stud at tight end. I think Keyote Armstrong is tremendous as well. I think talent-wise, that's the two best tight ends Texas is recruiting. The question is, Nick Townsend, we'll be talking about this on our live visit thread on Texas football this week and some of these visits. Nick Townsend at Alabama is a huge official visit. I didn't mention that one earlier. That's a huge official visit. I think that's Texas's competition. He already went there a few weeks ago. And I think in Alabama, I think DeBoer has that guy circled. I think Texas has him circled too. I mean, anybody at 6'3" and a half, 226 that runs 10.92 FAT 100 and plays tight end is a elite talent, especially with the ball skills he has and defensive physicality. He just wants to be a tight end, what we talked about earlier with Michael Terry. Then does Michael Terry factor into that at all? We'll see what Texas has to tell him. But I think Texas will sign two tight ends in this class if they get the two they want. But I'm not convinced it's Winston and somebody else. We'll have to see how it plays out.
All right, this one from Casey. Has there ever been a six-man player in the state of Texas that went on to play big-time college football? I got to ask you, is A&M big-time college football? I'm kidding. Jack Cardee. This is half a century ago or more. Jack Pardee, the longtime coach at the University of Houston for the Houston Oilers. He was actually a six-man guy from Cristobal, Texas, that ended up going to A&M, and he's one of the Junction boys for Paul Bear Bryant at A&M. Ended up in the NFL for the LA Rams. He actually did make it not just in college football, but beyond. But frankly, I haven't heard of many – others. I know there's been some eight men guys. They play that in both Nebraska and Oklahoma that have maybe made it on. I think Josh Brown was a kicker that made it pretty far on in the NFL, but I think he was.
I was looking now. Blake Monroe is our resident six man expert. He's not here, but I think Brandon Everidge at Granger played six man and then went to Oklahoma. The late Brandon Everidge.
I thought he was 1A.
Maybe they're 6A now, but or a six man now. But I do think there's a couple of six man guys out there. I've got to find those guys.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, hey, last one for today. This comes from Mark Leopard. Appreciate you guys and all the questions. Got a lot of stuff going about how does Sadir Mitchell look? How about Silas Bolden? We're going to have to do another Q&A type thing to talk about all those. Last one, and I want to get Rod and your thought on this, Jerry. Is there a player over the last few staffs that you think would have had a better career under Sark?
Oh, that is a good question.
Do you want to see Sam Ellinger under Sark just to see?
No.
Well, I know they're different, but wouldn't you want to at least see what he could have done a little? Because Ellinger wouldn't have been a battering ram like he was under Herman.
I mean, the guy had a tremendous last couple of years, but Devin Duvernay in that offense.
I was going to say the speed. That's what I was going with, too. I agree with you on that. Yep.
With that Devin Duvernay would have been downright scary in Sark's offense in college.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Especially with those hands.
Yep.
Especially with those hands.
And even though he's not a wiggle guy, Sark would have got him in motion and he'd put him in some great position. He's not a wiggle guy after the catch.
But he'd have got him running downhill, though. Oh. He'd have got him downhill. Ooh. He'd have got him going downhill with those screens.
Watch out.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm trying to think of somebody else as good as that one. That one's good. That's the best one under Herman.
All right, good stuff. All right, that's going to do it for this afternoon's On Texas Football Longhorn live stream. For Jerry Hamilton and Rod Babers, I'm Bobby Burton. Keep in touch. We're going to be up talking a lot of recruiting this week. I got a bunch of that stuff going on ontexasfootball.com as well as here on the YouTube channel. It should be a busy weekend for Texas football as the Horns host at least 6 official visitors this weekend. For Rod Babers and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Bobby Burton. This has been On Texas Football. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.